We're on page 322, chapter 6. We just learned last week about Amram marrying who he married. Sentence 21. Okay, last thing we finished discussing was Amram marrying his aunt, which gave birth to Moshe. And it says he gave birth to Aaron and Moshe. And Amram lived 137 years, and that's how they figure out that the Jews were not in Egypt actually 400 years, but rather 210 years. So in sentence 21, this is basically a bunch of names. Whose kids? He says, Ubnei Yitzhar, the children of Yitzhar were Korach, Nefeg, and Zichri. So just based on this, Amram and Yitzhar were brothers. And Amram's son was Moshe, and Yitzhar's son was Korach. So the famous Korach later that, you know, the earth opened up and swallowed him in, was Moshe Rabbeinu's first cousin. Their fathers were brothers. Moshe's father was Amram, and like you see in Pachtik 18, Kohar said, Amram, Yitzhar, and Chevron, and Uziel. Ubrei Uziel, Milshal, Veltzof, and Vesifsri. These were the children of Uziel. And now the pasuk says, "Vayikach Aaron took as a wife Elisheva bas Aminadav, Elisheva the daughter of Aminadav, Achais Nachshin. She was the sister of Nachshin, Leili Isha for a wife. Vateladayin. She gave birth to him as Nadav as Aviu, Elazar v'Isamar. Aaron has four children, as we know, Nadav and Aviu, Elazar and Isamar. Now Rashi quotes." From the famous Medrash over here, from the Gemara and the Medrash, it says who Aaron's wife was. Okay? Now, in Pasuk Chaf, in Pasuk 20, when it says Amram, it just says Amram married Yocheved. It doesn't say whose brother or sister she was, who she was. It just says Amram is aunt. Why over here does the Pasuk say Aaron married Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, the brother of the sister of Nachshon? So it says from here, the Gemara learns out that when you marry a woman, you have to check out her brothers. Why? Because the Gemara says most of the children are similar to the mother's brothers. Brothers. So therefore, it wants to tell us, who did Aaron marry? Aaron picked this woman, Elisheva. Why? Because she was the sister of Nachshon. Nachshon ben Aminadav was obviously the famous Jew that jumped into the Yam to split the sea. So therefore, he wants to say that what did Aaron care about? Aaron cared about marrying the sister of Nachshon. We find another historical thing. The Pasuk doesn't talk about it, but the Gemara talks about it. Moshe Rabbeinu, we all know, had a sister, Miriam. Miriam's husband was Kalev ben Yefunah. Remember the spies that went to Eretz Yisrael? So 10 came back with bad reports. Yehoshua and Kalev were the only ones that came back with good reports. So Kalev was also a tzaddik. Kalev, Rashi says, later on in Chumash, in Parshas B'Shachem, this week's Parsha, in fact, coming up, that Kalev married Miriam because she was Moshe Rabbeinu's sister. And the Gemara says, the Gemara elaborates that Miriam had a terrible skin disease that made her look very unattractive. And yet, Kalev married her because she was Moshe Rabbeinu's sister. And like it says over here, Aaron married Elisheva. Why? Because she was the sister of Nachshon. So he married, Kalev married Miriam, even though at that time she was mamish ugly, basically from the skin disease. But nevertheless, he married her, and the Gemara says that later on, Hashem healed her, and she was very beautiful. But when he married her what was called the Shem Shemayim, because her brother was this great person, Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's why it says who Aaron's wife was, and you know, whose sister she was. And she gave birth to four kids. Nadav and Avihu, as we'll learn later in Chumash, Nadav and Avihu were the two sons of Aaron that brought the four in fire, and were killed on the day that Mishkan was dedicated. And then there were two leftover sons, Elazar and Isamar. Uvnei Korach, who are the children of Korach? It says, Asir, Elkanah, Aviyasav, Ela Mishpachis HaKohorchi. These are the families of Korach, Asher, Elkanah, v'Yosef, and later on in Chumash we'll learn that they were the ones that did tshuva. The Pasuk says later, B'nei Korach lemeisu, that Korach's children did not die, because when the earth opened up to swallow in Korach, they screamed, Moshe emes, v'Torah say emes. Moshe is true, his Torah is true, they did tshuva, and because they did tshuva, Hashem didn't kill them. Now it says another thing. Elazar ben Aaron, lakach leim b'bneis putil leili isha. Elazar ben Aaron took from the daughters of Putil as a wife. Now, who is Putil? Rashi says Putil is one of two people. Putil is either Yisrei or Yosef. So, Putil is another name for Yisrei, Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law. And also, as like the Gemara says, and as the Mefarshim point out over here, that his father came from the Shevet of Yosef, and his mother was from the Zera of Yisrei, or the opposite. You know, they're not sure. In other words, one of the parents came from the tribe of Yosef, one of the parents came from Yisrei's descendants. So Elazar was related also to Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu's wife was Yisrael's daughter. So Elazar, besides being Moshe Rabbeinu's nephew, because his father Aaron was Moshe's brother, he was also related through his mother. And Elazar ben Aaron took from these wives, Vatedaleus Pinchas, and she gave birth to him, Pinchas. Ela Rashi Aves Alvim LeMishpachaisam, these are the heads of the tribes of Levi. Now, and this is where it's going to stop. So if you notice, starting from Sheni, Pasuk Yud Dalet, it starts mentioning the Jewish people. Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. And then it stops. So it says in the Mefarshim, what the Pasuk really wanted to do over here was to tell us the dynasty, the lineage of Moshe Rabbeinu, where Moshe Rabbeinu came from. So it started counting the tribe of Levi. But it already started from the beginning. So it went to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. But the question is, why does the Torah talk about Reuven and Shimon? It could have just said, you know, this is the lineage where Moshe Rabbeinu came from. So the answer is follows. The basic answer is, because when Yaakov Avinu, on his deathbed, told off the Shvatim, he told off Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. He was very harsh with them. The rest of the tribes, he wasn't harsh with them at all. Remember in Parshas Vayechi, he cursed their anger of Shimon and Levi. He was upset with Reuven. So the Mefarshim explained that because Yaakov Avinu was very harsh to Reuven, Shimon and Levi, so the Pasuk over here wants to show that there are still great tribes. So it starts counting from Reuven, Shimon and Levi. That's one answer. Another thing is, the Mefarshim learn, because Reuven, Shimon, and Levi were the only tribes in Egypt that didn't worship idols. All the other tribes worshipped idols. So in certain places it says only Levi didn't, and certain places it says Reuven, Shimon, and Levi didn't. So they learned that the reason why the Torah mentions Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, because they were outstanding by not worshipping idols in Mitzrayim, so they deserved, so to speak, an honorable mention. Okay, that's that. Okay, now the Pasuk says, Hu Aaron and Moshe, this is the Aaron and Moshe, and this is the purpose of this lineage. This is Aaron and Moshe, Asher Omer Hashem Lohem, that God said to them, Heitziu is B'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, to take out the Jews of Eretz Mitzrayim, al tzeveisim on their hosts. Meaning, and their tribes. Each tribe was taken out based on the lineage of that tribe. Meaning as follows. In the desert, each one of the tribes had their own flag. They each had their own flags. So he says, when he took them out of Egypt, it was al tzivaysam on their hosts, meaning on the tribes, the way they were taken out of Mitzrayim. I want to learn a few more psukim, and we'll see something very interesting over here. Hey, Mamadabrim El Pari Malach Mitzrayim, they are the ones that spoke to Pari, the king of Egypt. The Haiti is B'nai Yisrael, may I, to take the Jews out of Egypt. Who, you know what, that's his seat. He sits there for the last 80 years. Who Moshe Aaron? He is Moshe Aaron. Just sit here. Who Moshe Aaron? He is Moshe Aaron. Now, it's a very interesting phenomenon. If you look in Pasuk Chavav, it says, Who Aaron and Moshe? First Aaron, then Moshe. In Pasuk Chav Zayin, it says, Who Moshe Aaron? In Pasuk Chavav, it says Aaron first, then Moshe. And in Pasuk Chav Zayin, it says Moshe and then Aaron. So Rashi asks, why does it sometimes say Aaron and Moshe and sometimes Moshe and Aaron? To tell us that they're both equal. They're both equal. The world, but there's more to this than that. The world says 322. The world asks a question, why did it take two people to take the Jews out of Egypt? Why couldn't one Jew do it? Why did they need two Jews, Aaron and Moshe? So the world says an interesting comment. One was to take the Jews out of Egypt, and one was to take the Egypt out of the Jews. So one was to take the Jews out of Egypt, and one was to take the Egypt out of the Jew. Moshe and Aaron symbolized two ways of serving God. And we need both ways. And therefore the Torah is telling us Moshe and Aaron and Moshe. You need both equal. What's the difference? In Kabbalah language, it's a different words, but to explain it in simple English, Moshe Rabbeinu was godliness coming down. Aaron was godliness going up. What does this mean? In obviously in serving God, we learned many times, we spoke both by Matan Torah, when there's God and there's us, and you got to make a shidduch, connect Hashem to the Jews, so either God has to come to us, or we go up to God. And that's basically the way it works. In Yiddishkeit, you also have the difference between Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov the same way. Avraham, like we learned before in Chumash Bereishis, what does the Torah discuss about Avraham Avinu? He did hospitality. What's the definition of hospitality? I have food, you don't, I give you food. Which means, at the present, I am on a higher level, I'm better than you in this respect, and I give, the rich gives to the needy. Meaning, the one that has gives to the one that doesn't have. That is the concept of chesed, of going from higher to lower. Therefore, the attribute of chesed in chesedis is known as the level of water, mayim. If you look outside, you see water comes from a high place to the low place. Water comes from the mountain into the river. So mayim is symbolic of the concept of the higher coming down to the lower. Yitzchak, remember we learned a whole parsha in Yitzchak talks about Yitzchak digging wells. The whole half of parsha's told us talks about Yitzchak digging wells and them fighting and this going on and that and again fighting and again fighting, and finally he comes to the Chovos. He no more fighting. What was the concept of Yitzchak digging wells? Obviously, Yitzchak was a great tzaddik. He didn't go around digging wells all day. Why is the Torah emphasizing this concept of digging wells? Because what's the concept of digging wells? Digging wells is you dig deep and the water comes up. It's not the water coming down. It's the water going up. That symbolizes the level of the Jew going closer to God. What is that in physical sense? Fire. Fire goes from lower to higher. Okay? Therefore, chesed is called mayim. Gvura is called fire. Therefore, water, because it's an attribute of kindness and chesed, water nourishes and waters everything. Fire, because it's going up, it's a limitation, it's gvur, it's strictness. Fire burns, fire destroys. Fire burns things. Then you have Yaakov Avinu, which was the third one. Yaakov Avinu basically was the concept of colored sticks. Colored sticks is the combination of Chesed and Gvura together, which is the attribute of Teferes. So basically, Avram Yitzchak, and by the way, it's interesting, that's why Torah is called Mayim. There's a pasuk that says, Hay kol tzamei l'chula mayim. If you're thirsty, go to water. Vein mayim elo Torah. The Gemara says water refers to Torah. Torah is Chesed, as we say in Eishes Chal Friday night, V'seidath Chesed al Hashena, for Mishlei. Torah's Chesed means Torah's Mayim, Torah's likened to water. From the opposite side, we find the same thing with Torah. Torah is called fire. It says in Zeis HaBracha, Min Minay, from God's right hand, Eish Dos Lame came a fiery law. Torah is fire. How could Torah be likened to Mayim, and how could Torah be likened to fire if they're opposites? The answer is, there's an aspect in Torah which is coming from higher to lower. There's an aspect in Torah which is coming from lower to higher. That's the concept. And then there's the medium, middle ground. You know, you meet halfway. That's the level of Yaakov. So, the same thing is Moshe and Aaron. Moshe was a level of revealing godliness from higher to lower. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He brought down the Torah to the Jewish people. He taught Torah, him being on the higher level, taught Torah to the lower Jews. So that is Torah coming down. Aaron, on the other hand, what was Aaron's Avodah? Aaron's Avodah was kindling the Menorah. Ba'alos Chasaneres. Aaron kindled the Menorah in the Beis Hamikdash. What's the concept of kindling the Menorah? Not only is it fire, but it's also revealing and igniting the spark of the Jew that they should become closer to God. The kindling of the Menorah. So Aaron symbolizes the aspect of godliness of elevating the Jew to a higher level. Moshe Rabbeinu was bringing godliness down to the Jews. The pasuk is saying over here, you need Moshe and you need Aaron. And they're equal. So that sometimes the Torah says, Hu Aaron or Moshe, like it says in pasuk Chavov, and in pasuk Chavzayin it says, Hu Moshe ve'Aaron. Moshe first and then Aaron. Both had to be. Both had to be. That's also connected, by the way, why in the Midbar they had three things. They had the man, they had the well, and they had the clouds. So leaving Miriam out for a while, Moshe Rabbeinu was the schus of the man. The man fell from heaven. Again, this concept of Moshe Rabbeinu coming down. The clouds were basically underneath the Jews, on top of the Jews, all around the Jews. It's more the level of Aaron's level. What? And I'm sorry? No. In the Midbar. Yaakov died already. So he was, the clouds, which symbolize the concept of elevating the Jew, was in the schus of Aaron. So you see, that's why the pasuk is teaching us that not only are they equal, but it has to be in a way that we need both. Rashi just adds, why does it say, Hu Moshe v'Aaron? We find the same thing coming up in a month. We have Purim. At the beginning of the Megillas Esther, it says, Vayhi b'mei Achashverosh, Hu Achashverosh. It wasn't the days of Achashverosh, he was Achashverosh. And the Gemara says, what does it mean, Hu Achashverosh? Rashi quotes in the Megillah, from the Gemara in Megillah, he was the Rasha from beginning to end. So Rashi says the opposite over here. Hu Moshe v'Aaron, they were righteous from beginning to the end. They didn't become corrupted with ego. They didn't become ruined by the power that they had or all the miracles that they showed. They were righteous from beginning to end. So it says, Hu Aaron, Hu Moshe v'Aaron. And they were the ones that were commanded to speak to Pari, the king of Egypt, to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim. Okay. Now it says in Pasuk Chavches, Vayhi b'yemdi b'Hashem o'Meshe b'Eretz Mitzrayim. It was in the day that Hashem spoke to Meshe in the land of Mitzrayim. And this is like a break in the middle of the pasuk. And the Rashi says it's connected to the pasuk afterwards. So what happened? Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe leimer. Hashem said to Moshe, Ani Hashem, I am God. So the question is, what do you mean I'm God? God said to Moshe, I'm God. Of course he's God. I mean, what's he saying? So Rashi says, I am worthy enough that you should listen to me to do the job that I gave you to do. Because what I say is what's going to happen. Even though, as we know, it's not going to be easy because Paro is going to deny them. Paro is not going to let them do it. But nevertheless, Hashem said, don't worry, it's going to happen. Just be patient a little bit. Hashem likes when Jews are patient. See, the problem is, huh? They never are. Zvizus and us doing things. We live in a world of instant gratification. You do something, you want instant reward. You want to get rich quick. You want to get everything quick. Hashem says, Savlonut, patience. I'm going to take the Jews out of Egypt in the right time. It's not going to come easy. You're going to scream and yell. That's fine. I'm just telling you now, Hashem says, it's going to happen. But you just have to be patient a little bit.
When Moshe Rabin had to daven to Hashem to alleviate the
plagues,
to leave Egypt. But Hashem could talk to him and could talk back to Hashem when he's in Egypt. This is also coming.
The land of Mitzrayim is different than Mitzrayim. There was Eretz Mitzrayim is the country, and then there was the city of Mitzrayim, which was the capital of Tumah. And sometimes later, when we get there later, we'll discuss that Moshe Rabbeinu had to leave the city of Mitzrayim.
City of Mitzrayim or country?
City of Mitzrayim. Yet, even though Rashi says later in Parshas Bo'i, which we read last Shabbos, that Hashem told Moshe a prophecy while standing in the presence of Paro. And Chassidus elaborates on this concept, Bechlal, can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, the highest possible level of holiness in a human being? Right? The highest prophet, the highest Jew. Paro was the epitome of evil. And they're standing in the same room talking to each other. The epitome of Kedusha, and the epitome of evil, having a dialogue together in the same room at the same time. Only God can combine those two things.
This is the same Paro that Moshe grew up in his house.
Yeah.
Paro knew of him from the childhood.
Yeah. Paro was a different Paro, not the same Paro.
It doesn't say, it says before Vayakam Malachadish, but that was before Moshe Rabbeinu was born. Again, it could be it was the same. It doesn't say in the Torah there was a new one. It doesn't say there was a new one. Now, it could be there was a new one that the Torah doesn't find it necessary to mention because all the kings of Egypt were called Paro. Just like all the kings of Bashan, one opinion says, were called Og. Therefore, you have Og in the time of Avram Avinu. And then you have Og that Moshe Rabbeinu killed. So the Mefarshim say, how can it be the same Og?
But they said it was the same one. He lived many years.
So some Mefarshim learned that it was the same one, and he lived very, very long. And some Mefarshim learned that, no, it was different guys, and all the kings of Bashan were called Og. In fact, the commentators even ask a stronger question. There's a Medrash that said that after Eliezer, Avram's servant, Eliezer, found the Shidduch for Yitzchak, he found Rivka, Avram freed him. And one opinion says he became Eig Melech HaBashan. So, if I'm not mistaken, the Daskin Malotesis asks, Eig Melech HaBashan was a Rasha. Eliezer was a Tzaddik. How could it be Eig Melech HaBashan? And the answers are different ones. Different people. Different people. The one was a Tzaddik, one was a Rasha. When the Torah says later on in Chumash, you're not allowed to go back to Egypt, the simple explanation of it is because, you know, the Egyptians were so cruel to us. Hashem said, you know what? Look what they did to you. Don't go back there. Not in a biblical sense. That this is from the Torah. Do you know that there was a ban on Spain for 500 years after the Inquisition? The rabbis at that time forbid, but it's not biblical, obviously, because it was... They made a cherem on Spain for 500 years that no Jew is allowed to go back to Spain. After 500 years, the ban automatically, so to speak, fell off. But there was a cherem at one time not to go back, that you can't go back to Spain for the torture that they wanted to do it with Germany, by the way, and not everybody agreed with it. Whatever. There weren't as great people like there were 500 years ago. So they never, but there was an idea of making a ban on Germany also because of that. Because of what they did. So therefore, simply it says, the halacha is you can't go back to Egypt. Now, some of Farshim learn that you can't go back the way the Jews left Egypt. Because they all ask the question, the Rambam lived in Egypt. And the Radvaz lived in Egypt. And many great tzaddikim lived in Egypt. If the Torah says you can't live in Egypt, how can the Rambam live in Egypt? And the Rambam himself brings on the halacha, you're not allowed to live in Egypt. So all the commentators of the Rambam say, hey, buddy, how did he live there? So they answered, the Rambam was forced by the government to live there, or he went a different way back, not the way the Jews left Egypt. But there's a deeper meaning of this. There's a Chassidish explanation, which is very, very good, very logical, and obviously true. A Jew is in a country because they have a mission to elevate those sparks of Kedusha that exist in that country. Every Jew, wherever they end up, is because that is the place God destined that their sparks of Kedusha, their holiness that they have to elevate to make the world holy, is in that part of the world.
What if they're not from?
God makes them end up there anyway. Because they have their mission to accomplish. So, as it's explained, some people think, oh, you know why I live in California? Because that's where my job is, that's where my spouse is, that's where my mother-in-law is not. You know, the various reasons of why a person might end up in California. That's Baba Mises. The real reason a Jew ends up in California is because that's where their sparks have to be elevated. The Jews that live in the Midwest, and not only general, that particular city, that particular neighborhood, is all because the Jew has sparks of Kedusha to elevate in that part of the world by doing mitzvahs there. When the Jews left Egypt, as we read last Shabbos, this past Shabbos, v'yinatzlu etz Mitzrayim, they emptied out Egypt. Every spark of Kedusha that existed in Egypt, the Jews took out with them at the time they left Egypt. If all the sparks of Kedusha are gone, there's no purpose for a Jew to be there. And if there's no purpose for a Jew to be there, the Torah says, then you're not allowed to be there. Because obviously you have a mission somewhere else in the world to do. That's why the halacha says you're allowed to go to Egypt for business. Why for business can you go to Egypt in halacha? Because the business brought new sparks of Kedusha back in there. So for those sparks, you can elevate it. But the country itself was already finished. All the sparks of Kedusha are out of there, and there's nothing more for a Jew to do. And if there's nothing more for a Jew to do, it's forbidden to be there. You find many neighborhoods that, you know, Jews lived there, and the Jews moved out, and we won't say who moved in. I don't want to sound racist, but other people moved in, and they destroyed the area.
Darkness.
Yeah. What happened? The Jews did all the mitzvahs already there. They elevated the whole community. That's it. And now that neighbor could fall apart because all the sparks of Kedusha were already elevated.
So in the end, when the whole world as a general becomes spun, then the whole world is destroyed.
The world's falling apart anyway. What's the difference? Mashiach will come and rebuild the world. The Nitzutzes. The sparks of Kedusha. So that's why after the Jews left Egypt, there was a halacha, you're not allowed to go back to Egypt. Yeah, it says you can't live there. A Jew can visit there.
So the capital was in Cairo, was it?
Huh?
Capital.
It could be Mitzrayim, but the city of Mitzrayim was really, it became eventually Cairo.
No, but this Mitzrayim that you're saying, was it Tum'ah over there?
Yeah.
Is it that all the Jewish people, there was slavery, they
That's the whole Mitzrayim was where Jews lived, yeah. It worked, whatever. Okay. So, Vaydaber Hashem HaMeshalim in Pasuk of Tess. Vaydaber Hashem HaMeshalim, Hashem said to Mesh, Ani Hashem, I am God, meaning, I am Kedai that you should fulfill what I'm telling you to do. What am I telling you? Daber al Parei Melech Mitzrayim, speak to Parei, Eis Kol Asher Ani Dever Alecha, everything I'm speaking to you. So now, Moshe Rabbeinu is arguing again, but Rashi says it's not an argument, it's going back to what we learned in the previous part. Vayomer Moshe lefnei Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu said before God, listen God, Hein ani adal sfasayim, behold, I am not able to speak properly. Ve'chishmei lai Parah, how do you expect Parah to listen to me? This is what we learned in before, yeah? Yeah. Pasuk Perik Vav Pasuk Yud Beis. He said, "Hey, over there was a Kavachim." He said, "Hey, Bnei Yisrael, Shomei Levechish Meini Pariv Ani Aral Sfasayim." Okay, so therefore, he basically says, "You know, I can't do it." But there's not a new argument. He's just going back, and in the middle, the Torah broke it by saying the lineage, you know, of where Moshe Rabbeinu came from, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. No, it also means that he couldn't talk properly. He couldn't talk properly.
But he did talk to
Pari. Aaron talked to Pari. Moshe Rabbeinu told him what to say and he said it. That's what he says. Vayem Hashem al Moshe, the next pasuk. Vayem Hashem al Moshe, listen. Re'ei nesati nesaticha lakim lefari. I made you as a boss. To Pari, Alakim means somebody harsh, like a judge to punish. And the Grashi said, I made you his judge and his beater-upper, you know, to beat him up. For Aaron Achicha Yen Neviyacha. Aaron, your brother, will be your interpreter. Meaning, Aaron is going to do the speaking, and you're going to be doing the you know, the punishments and so on. Huh? Neviyachah, because Rashi explains, Rashi says, all Lashon of Nevuah, what is Nevuah? He is God's interpreter. He is the one that says God's message to the masses. That's not an interpreter. See, in the time of the Gemara, they have what was called a meturgeman. A meturgeman was not a guy that translated into a different language. The Rosh Yeshiva didn't necessarily have a loud voice. He would tell the meturgeman, and the meturgeman would speak it louder and elaborate in the explanation of what the head rabbi said. So what does a Navi do? A Navi, basically, God speaks to the Navi, and the Navi gives it over to the people. So therefore, Neviyacha actually means a meturgeman. And that's what Rashi says, V'chein kol lashon nevuah, Adam u'machriz mashmi l'am divrei chachamim. And he says it's like with nifsvasayim, which is the concept of moving the lips as an interpreter, as a meturgeman. Now the Datskin Balatesis says, why is God saying, I'm making you Elokim lefarei, as a god to Parei? So he says as follows. Parei made himself as a god. As we know, Parei never went publicly to the bathroom. Because Parei said, I'm a god, I don't need to use the facility. Parei used to get up early in the morning, before everybody got up, and he used to do his thing. That's why all the times God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, go meet Pari in the morning when he's in denial, to show him that you know he's not a god. But Pari made himself a god. So that's why Hashem said to Moshe, you are going to be Pari's god. Meaning, he says he's a god. I'm going to show him that he's not a god, you're his god. You're his mentor, his leader, and so on. Okay, Ata Tadaber, you see, this is what the Pasuk says. Ata Tadaber, you should say once, Rashi explains. Eish Kol Asher Tzavaka, everything I commanded you. That means whenever I tell you to say something to Parei, you say it once. V'Aaron Achicha Yidaber El Parei, and Aaron, your brother, should speak it to Parei. V'Shilach Hazbinei Yisrael Me'artzei, and you send away the Jews from, that he should send away the Jews from his land. And the Mefarshim, by the way, I mentioned this last time, or two times, or whenever. The Mefarshim explain that God wanted Moshe Rabbeinu until Matan Torah. At Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu became healed. Moshe Rabbeinu became healed at Matan Torah. But until Matan Torah, God didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to be a very good speaker. Why? So the Mefarshim say, believe it, the Mefarshim say this. If Moshe Rabbeinu would be an orator, an unbelievable speaker, a good salesman, so to speak, people are going to say, you know why the Jews, Moshe Rabbeinu sold the Jews this lakshin, this Torah? Because he was a great speaker, he was a great salesperson, so he knew how to convince people to buy the goods. Hashem said, you know what, I'm going to make him a lousy speaker, and the Jews are going to buy the goods because the goods are good, not because the spokesman is good. And that's why it says in the Mefarshim, Hashem wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to be an Aras V'Sayim. After the Jews received the Torah, so then there was no need for Moshe Rabbeinu to be a lousy salesperson. He could become a good salesperson because they bought it already.
So he did talk better afterwards.
After Matan Torah was healed. Completely.
We have a proof of that in the Chumash?
The what?
That he was healed?
Matan Torah, it says in the Medrash, everybody was healed.
Matan
Torah healed all the sick. So if Moshe Rabbeinu had an impediment of speech, so obviously Matan Torah healed them also, for sure.
Is it Madrigal of Mashiach, Matan Torah?
It was almost the level of Mashiach. Mashiach is greater than Matan Torah.
Yeah.
As it says in Tanya, in Teperek Lamed Zayin, I believe it is, Alt Rebbe says, Me'ein Zahoyah b'Matan Torah. A little bit of the revelation of Mashiach was at Matan Torah. But the primary revelation will be Mashiach comes. Okay, now, in Pasuk Gimel, Vani Akshes Leif Parei, I'm going to harden the heart of Parei. V'Yabesi Yasei Sei Sei, I'm going to multiply my signs, my miracles, V'Yasmeitzei, my wonders, V'Eretz Mitzrayim, in the land of Mitzrayim. Hashem says, and I'm going to read the next Pasuk, what is Hashem saying? I want you to go to Parei, tell him to let the Jews out, I'm going to harden his heart, he's not going to listen to you, I'm going to beat him up, and he's still not going to listen. Oh, you should have been here Shabbos. V'yishma aleichem parei. Parei is not going to listen to you. V'nasati yisyodi b'mitzrayim. And I'm going to give my hand in Egypt, meaning I'm going to punish the people in Egypt. We did mention something Shabbos, but most of the people in the room were not here Shabbos. But there's a phenomenal concept that Rebbe explains in the Sicha. There's a famous question everybody asks. To paraphrase it, if I tell you to do something, I tell you, for instance, pour me a cup of water. But before I tell you to pour me a cup of water, I tie your hands behind your back in a way that it's impossible for you to pour me the cup of water. After I tie your hands, I say, you know, do me a favor, pour me a cup of water. And you don't do it, so I smack you in the face because you didn't pour me a cup of water. That's very foolish because I tied your hands behind the back. I didn't let you do it. So how is it that you punished for not pouring me the cup of water? I didn't let you pour me a cup of water. Why should you be punished? And this is the question that all the commentaries ask. God said, I'm going to harden the heart of Parai. Right? I'm going to harden the heart of Parai. He's not going to let you out. And therefore, I'm going to punish him. Nebuch, the poor guy, what do you want from him? So, the Rebbe Nesich, I didn't mention the Shabbos, but the Rebbe Nesich, bring on interesting halacha with this. Number one, the commentaries explain that at the beginning, God didn't harden Pari's heart. Pari didn't want the Jews to go out on his own. After that, after Pari said no, so then God said, you know what? Now that you said no, now I'm going to harden your heart and then I'm going to punish you. So the punishment of hardening the heart came later. Okay? In other words, Pari allowed him himself to do what's wrong to be punished. In Gemara, there's an interesting halacha. If I'm watching your animal and I'm negligent, I have to pay. If an accident happens, I don't have to pay. Right? What happens, it's called in Gemara language, Tchilasi b'pshia v'seife ba'enis. It started off negligent, but the end was an accident. Are you obligated to pay or not? In other words,
negligence caused the accident.
Yeah, but chilasi b'pshia, you're beginning off pshia v'sefer ba'enis. So there's an argument. One opinion says chayiv, one opinion says pater. So the Rebbe explained, if it's chayiv, then this is exactly what pari. Pari started off being negligent on his own. At the end, God forced him not to listen. So at the end, he wasn't punished. It wasn't his fault. But he started off being negligent. So therefore, the din is he's chayiv. The Rebbe explained, even if not, it was still his fault more than other cases. Okay. But the Rebbe says here a phenomenal concept that we mentioned Shabbos, and that is, even though God hardened his heart, Pari could have still done tshuva. And God demanded from him still to do tshuva. And the Rebbe brings down in the Sicha, in the footnote, the same thing happened with this person, Acher. There was a person by the name of Elisha ben Avuya, who was the Rebbe of Rab Meir, and he became, at the end of his life, he became a complete apostate, apikratus, non-believer. Desecrated the entire Torah. He still continued studying Torah, but he desecrated the whole Torah. So, a voice came out from heaven. Acher was thinking, they called him later Acher because he became a different person. So Acher was thinking about doing tshuva. So a voice came out from heaven and said, everybody could do tshuva except Acher. A voice came out from heaven and said, everybody could do tshuva except Acher. So Acher said, you know what, forget it. So the Gemara says, he was punished for still not doing tshuva. Because if he pushed, his tshuva would have been done.
Isn't it one opinion that in the end he did tshuva?
No. I don't know, maybe. But, it doesn't sound like it's the Gemara. But, basically, that means even though God himself said, Acher can't do tshuva, Acher still should have done tshuva. To push his way in. Why? Because nothing stands in the way of tshuva. And the same thing the Rebbe explains was with Pari. Pari said, I'm not letting the Jews out. God hardened his heart. Pari still had the ability and therefore the responsibility of letting the Jews out anyway. He could have still done tshuva. Which means, as the Rebbe explains in the Sikh on a practical level, that even a Jew that's so far away from Yiddishkeit that you could think that God hardened his heart, so to speak. God made him in a situation knows nothing about Judaism, nothing about anything. Nevertheless, you have to go to that person because even that person could do tshuva. Even the guy that screams, I'm anti-religious, I'm anti-Jewish, I'm anti-everything, even those Jews, you have to push to do tshuva. Because every Jew has to do tshuva.
The shacha you're talking about, is there anything in that follows
no.
that has to do with this guy?
No.
No?
No.
Not the one you're talking about?
No. Nope.
Okay.
Sorry.
No problem.
Okay, and therefore, the Arachaim HaKadosh explains, he says, V'nasati esyodi b'mitzrayim, in Pasuk Dalet, he says, I'm going to put my hand in Egypt, and I'm going to take the Jews out. So the Arachaim HaKadosh explains, what hand is God giving? That's the hand of the firstborn. Because concerning the firstborn, we read in the Haggadah of Pesach, V'avayti Beretz Mitzrayim, God says, I am going to pass through that night in Egypt. Me, not an angel, not a messenger, me. Me, myself, and I. That's what the Pasuk says. Pari's not going to listen to you for the first 9 plagues. This is the way the Arachaim learns. Then, V'nasati Yesyodi B'Mitzrayim, I'm going to put my hand, meaning me, myself, I'm going to punish Egypt, and then you're going to take the Jews out. So that refers to the 10th plague of killing the firstborn. But until then, God says he's not going to listen to you.
Why Hashem never does he always look to Malachim? What he wanted to do himself?
When you speak through a microphone, who's speaking, the microphone or you?
You.
Through through whom?
Microphone.
Huh?
Microphone, no.
So, who's doing it?
So, but he said here, he did it himself.
When a person chops wood with an axe, who's chopping the wood?
Person.
The axe is chopping the wood, not the person. Who's chopping the wood, though? The person. Why? Because it's only a vessel, it's only a tool, it's only a vehicle. Right? If somebody says to you, how did he get here? By car. The car brought you, or you brought it? You came here. The car had free choice. The car had the right to say, I don't want to drive you today. I don't want to take you here today. The axe has an opinion, I don't want to chop, I'm not in the mood of chopping today. The axe is no free will, nothing. The malach has no free will. Whoever God works through has no free will. God does it. He needs a tool. He has a tool. But God chops the wood, not the axe. Everything that comes about, sometimes it could come in a direct way, like when Hashem himself does it. It could come in a direct, indirect way, is when Hashem does it through messengers. A malach is a messenger of God. So sometimes, in fact, what's the difference? In fact, it says about the malach of Mitzrayim. All the nations of the world, with the exception of the Jews, get their sustenance from God through angels. Like Esav had an angel. By Kriyas Yamsuf, it said, the angel, the Jews opened their eyes in today's parasha, and they saw Mitzrayim, they say Achareim. So Rashi says, who's Mitzrayim? The angel of Esav was coming to fight them.
That's
right. Huh? What did I say, Esav? Say, the angel of Mitzrayim was coming to fight them, right? What does it mean? Hashem's sustenance to the nations go through channels, goes through angels. Who's giving it to them? Hashem. But it goes through angels. Sometimes Hashem gives you direct. Right? Sometimes the tzaddik wants to give you something. So sometimes he sends it through a shliach to give it to you. Sometimes the tzaddik himself gives it to you. Both times the tzaddik is giving it to you. This is a greater revelation, and this is a hidden revelation of the tzaddik. Sometimes Hashem does things with the Jews, without any intermediaries, without any angels. Hashem gives it direct. Like it says, Nasati Yodi b'Mitzrayim is going to be straight in my hand. There's not going to be any angels along the way. There's not going to be any vehicles. It's going to be straight in me. Sometimes Hashem gives it through messengers. Who's sending it? Hashem himself. But obviously there's a difference if Hashem gives it directly or indirectly, even though it's all coming from Hashem. When a person has a job and they get paid by the boss, yeah, who's giving them the money?
Boss.
No. Hashem is giving you the money. Who gives you parnasa? Hashem. So, but who does he give it through? He gives it through the boss. It's Hashem's money. There's a famous story. We mentioned the story in the past. When the Tzemach Tzedek, it's with Rebbe Marash, was before Pesach, and the Tzemach Tzedek was cleaning the kids' pockets for chametz, and he found candies in the Rebbe Marash's pocket. As a kid, he found candies in his pocket. So the Rebbe Marash said, what is this? You know, why didn't you... He said, the Malach Michal's candies, and he doesn't want to destroy them. What's the story? When a kid, they do it today also, but years ago they did it more. When a kid was 3 years old or so, or four, whatever age it was, and they started bringing the kid into cheder, what did they do? They wrapped the kid from the house. It's a beautiful minig. They still do it today in our circles at least. You wrap the kid in a talis, doesn't see anything. And you carry him into the cheder, into the school. And you sit him down, and you start teaching him Aleph Beis. You have a big thing, it says Aleph. You say to the kid, Aleph. And the kid said Aleph, and all of a sudden candies start flying from all over the place. You tell him Beis, all of a sudden the kid said Beis, candies start flying from all over the place. And the minig was, you tell the kid that Malach Michal, the angel Michal, is giving you the candies, and when you learn Torah, it's going to be sweet. That's how you start initiating the kid into the learning of Torah.
Never happened to me.
That's why. Now, the Rebbe Marash, because there are such holy candies, he didn't want to eat them. But it came Pesach, so the Tzemach Tzedek said, you have to eat up the candies. So the Rebbe has a whole sicha. One side thing the Rebbe asked, why couldn't they sell it to the guy? They go the other chametz. And the Rebbe answered, it was a holy thing, like Rebbes didn't want the things sold to the guy. So Malach Michal's candies, you don't sell to the guy. You have to eat it up. But the Rebbe asked a very primary, basic question. The fundamental rule in educating children is you don't lie to them. Fundamental rule, you don't lie to a child. So the question, Malach Michal threw him the candies? The father, the mother, the brothers, whoever's there, are throwing the candies. What are you telling the kid, Malach Michal throws you the candies? It's a lie. How do you do that to Chinuch? So the Rebbe explains, no, it's true. The candies are coming from Malach Michal. Through the father, through the mother, through the brother. Who is really giving the candies? The Rebbe explains, Malach Michal is really giving the candies. It's not a lie, it's true. But the Malach Michal is giving it through the father and the mother and the brother and the sister and the Rebbe and the whatever it is. Hashem does miracles. It's Hashem doing it. Sometimes Hashem does it directly. Like it says, I'm doing my hand. And sometimes Hashem works through angels. Jews merit to have straight sustenance from God. But it could, you know, it's not a contradiction. Huh? Revelation-wise, it's greater.
So when God came to kill them, it was a bigger kill.
Listen, would you want that the Rebbe should send you something through the mail or through somebody else, or he should himself give it to you?
Well,
you get it. You get it, but what's greater? I'll give you another example without the Rebbe explains in Tanya. If I like somebody, I want to give him a present. So I look at them, I smile at them, I want to face to face, yeah? If you have to sustain or give something to somebody you hate, what do? You throw it over your shoulders. I don't want to look at you here. Take dinner. You know what I mean? Now, are you giving it to them?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the difference if you get it thrown over the shoulder or you get it with a face to smile, a face to face smile and a nice relationship? What's the difference? It's still better getting it face to face than it is getting thrown over your shoulder.
So it was more serious.
But Vati Batsim Shaim, yeah. It was the Eibishter himself. It was the highest levels, yeah.